Sales is a dirty word, but not for my guest today, Jess Tucker. I'm not sure about you, but I personally did not know what I was doing at the age of 30.
You have every resource and talent that you need. You just haven't figured out what you like.
But due to his circumstances, at a very early age of 13, Jess realized that money brings freedom.
I'm really a circumstance and a byproduct of my mother, father, and my two older brothers.
And then he started selling shoes and then cars. And for the last 19 years, he has been selling homes to real estate investors, building their path of financial freedom.
When I got my first job at, like, paid job at 11, 12 years old, selling newspapers, I was hooked. I loved it. Like, for me, I thought I was going to sell newspapers my whole life.
He's 42 today, and from 13 years to ages of 42, we can say that he knows a thing or two about sales.
If you do what you're passionate about, the money will always follow because you'll outwork people.
So this podcast is a must watch if you are selling anything to anyone.
That's why I love content and me being out there so much more, because I think people would start to come back now and say, he's full of shit.
If you are a realtor, a mortgage agent, an insurance advisor, or have any sort of business which is consumer facing, there are nuggets of gold in this discussion that can change the course of your business. So without further ado, I present to you Jess Tucker. Jess, I'm so glad that we are doing this. I've been following you for such a long time. We have talked a couple of times and I have so many questions. But I want to start from the beginning. What circumstances made Jess Tucker?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for taking the trip, man. Like, as a fellow content creator as well, I know how hard it is to, A, put yourself out there, B, get everything booked, and then from, you know, for your out-of-province and out-of-country listeners, I mean, you took over an hour and a half drive, and you came in with a team, as I was saying, your obvious better, much better half, getting everything set up and stuff, and so I have a lot of respect
thank
for
you.
That, and for all the content that you do put out there. I'm not surprised that you have the success, not only in your business, man, but the amount of people and the ripple effect that you're having of what I like to, the virus I like to put out there, which is more positivity. And so seeing some of your stuff, like on socials and stuff like that, I can tell why so many people are attracted to you.
Thank you.
You're always smiling. You came in here with a lot of energy, and believe me, I got a lot of energy. And so for somebody who can somewhat match that, I always respect that. But in terms of your questions, look, I'm really a circumstance and a byproduct of my mother, father, and my two older brothers. If, you know, I always look at the fact of how lucky I am. Like, I work my ass off when it comes to the business and work, but to think that there's no luck involved would be very, very naive, because I don't know, you know, for your viewers and listeners, how much they believe in the higher spiritual being and God and all that kind of stuff. But I have faith, and I do believe that there's something bigger than us. And for that person to put me in a place that they did with my mother, father, and my two older brothers, I got to be the luckiest person in the world, because I could have been born a tree or a plant or in some other remote place in the world. But my father and mother, who immigrated here from India, from Punjab to be specific, in 1973, 1974, my father had a grade 8 education. My mother had a grade 4 education, right? Till this day, my mom doesn't really speak English. She knows maybe a couple of swear words she's probably picked up along the way, having three sons. But for them to have given me, I think, what is the most important, and now I have two little boys myself, 9 and 7, they gave me a lot of support, emotional support, right? Especially watching me through my adolescence years, my teenage years, having trouble in school, getting suspended and stuff like that. Not for anything major, but just being disruptive in class, right? I mean, I was the kid who didn't really learn in that setting. I needed to be up and doing stuff, talking to people. I mean, there's no surprise, I guess, that I like to do a lot of content if you look back, but they never put me down for that. They never told me that I wasn't smart enough. They never told me that I couldn't do something. In fact, it was the exact opposite. You know, my father always said to me, In fact, I'm wearing the shirt right now, right? And I wear it because of what he used to say to me, which is, you're enough. Like, don't think that you need to become someone else or be like someone else. You have every resource and talent that you need. You just haven't figured out what you like, right? And he and my mom, I mean, I'm looking back, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it because I generally don't go there in content, so I appreciate the question. But it was like kisses and I love yous every single night. Like, my father worked as a taxi driver at the airport, and you had to, as an airport taxi driver, you work like 24 hours in one day, and then you had the next day off. So for the full day, I would never see my father because he was at work. And then the day that he was off, he would be catching up on sleep, right? Maybe it was like a 10-hour sleep or whatever. But I still remember every night he would come into my bed and kiss me and whisper something in my ear. And it was like, I love you. Or, you know, in our language, they say, I love you, putti, like my little child, right? I still call my kids that till this day. And so having my father and mother and then my two older brothers, they kept me out of a lot of trouble because I'm born and raised in an area called Rexdale, where there's a lot of it could get very, very negative and you can get into a lot of trouble in those kind of areas. But my brothers kept me away from that. One is 5 years older. The other one is 9 or 10 years older than I am. And they really let me hang around with their friends. And so when I was 12, I was hanging around 21-year-olds, right? When I was 15, I was hanging around 24, 25-year-olds. When I got to become that age, it was like deja vu for me, right? Because I was already hearing conversations at such a young age. And like my first time I went into a nightclub, I think they snuck me in when I was 13 years old, you know? And so being in that environment of older people always, I kind of aged up pretty quickly, right? And so when I became 21 and 25 and 30, it was like I was already here. You know, like I was already in certain situations because I hung around my older brother so much. Now, you know, not a lot of people like having a little punk brother hanging out with them and their friends, right? But, you know, a testament to both of my brothers, they would always say, like, don't talk much. Because we don't want you to embarrass us because you're young. However, we're going to let you hang out with us. But that taught me that, I do have 2 ears in one mouth. I got to listen twice as much as I speak. So I didn't really do a lot of talking. But right? Maybe now I'm trying to get it out with content all the time. But that was the biggest thing.
But I think that can actually take you in a different direction as well. Like, you have to, because yes, you were thinking more maturely. You aged pretty quickly. But you still have that mental maturity and the mental learning. Now, it could have taken you in a darker place as well because you don't have, kids your age. So what was that thing holding you? Is it from inside or was it your brothers?
Look, I mean, for me, I think it was also at that time, listening to the conversations that my brother's friends were having and my brothers were having, you start to realize, all of them worked as well and they had freedom. And I was like, oh, okay, so I guess if you work, you can have some money. And very quickly learned, even at a young age, that the money doesn't bring you happiness, but it brings you freedom. So I don't think money's the end all be all, but I think it's very important.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I think it's very, very important because then you can start to throw some money at problems that you have. You can essentially buy back some of the time. And so for me, when I got my first job at like paid job at 11, 12 years old, selling newspapers, I was hooked. I loved it. Like, for me, I thought I was going to sell newspapers my whole life because I was like, this is it. Like, oh my God, I get to knock on doors. I get to, 95% of the people's doors you knocked on, they were nice people. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they maybe said no to you. They didn't want your paper, but maybe it was 5%. So literally 5 out of every 100 doors I knocked on, they would close the door and say, don't you ever come back here, right? Okay. But for the majority of the time, it was nice people or kind people. And then I got paid for it. So it was like, it was very easy for me to understand like, I could do this for a while now. Now, you get older and you realize you want to do a little bit more and more, have more of a challenge. And so for me, to answer your question, Ab, I think it was an internal, it was always in me, man. Like, I loved people. I loved meeting new people. I hearing no's, even at 11 and 12, knocking on doors.
Why do you think that is? Because
it never bothered. You know what? I think if I really look back, I think my parents filled up my cup so much. Like, you know, I feel so bad and I feel almost guilty for the amount of love I got from my parents. Because I have people around me, my friends that I grew up with, for majority of the part, except for one friend and a core group of 10 of us, nine of them didn't have a mother and father. They either had a mother or they had a father, one of the two. And some of it was like circumstances from like divorce, separation, parents passed away. It was a mixture of things. Where for me, my parents filled up my cup so much. Like, being told that you're loved every single day, that's gonna change who you are.
Yeah.
Like, maybe some people can get entitled or whatever, but we also didn't have a lot of money. Not that we didn't have anything, right? We're kind of like maybe lower middle class, I guess you can kind of call it. And so for me, having that every single day instilled into me, and then my parents telling me that even if you fail, we still love you. That's a game changer, right? Like,
you have nothing to lose. You,
right? Because it wasn't like, oh, my father's going to disown me.
Yeah.
He was like, ah, you fail. Like, don't worry. Like, we still love you. And he didn't even say it as much. He just showed it. If I lost a soccer game, if I got even, you know, for the amount of D's and C's I got, F's I got in school, still, I love you. I still love, like, don't worry, you're going to figure it out.
That's amazing.
Then you start to get this confidence now, like, oh, okay, I could try things and I fail. Now looking, you know, I'm 41 years old, almost 42 years old, where I probably have failed way more times than I've succeeded, way more times, but it's never stopped me. I just keep getting up.
Why?
And going again. Well, now it's different, right? Now at 41, like I know for sure that it's the failures that make the successes.
No, but when you were 12 years old, 13, 14 years old, and you had failure, it's so easy to quit.
Oh, for sure.
So why did you not quit?
Yeah, you know what? I really want to give your viewers and listeners something of value in terms of the answer, but I'd be lying because I'd be making something up from that age perspective. I think I just, for me, it was more of, well, why wouldn't I just keep trying? I'm having fun, right? I didn't have many jobs that I didn't enjoy. In fact, the second I stopped enjoying it, I left. And there was a pattern. I delivered newspapers for 3 years. I left. I sold shoes to like marathon runners and sprinters for 3 years and left. I went to the banking industry for 3 years and left. I was in car sales for 3 years and I left. Real estate has been 19 years. And the reason I think I didn't leave this industry is because it took me so long to get a real grasp on how I was going to be able to win in this. The other places that I just mentioned, within about a year and a half, I got it down pat. I understood how to sell more cars than other people in the dealership. I understood how to sell more shoes. In the banking industry, it was loans and lines of credits. I kind of figured that out quite quickly. Real estate took me a while because I started when I was quite young. I started at the age of 23 years old, I got licensed. So I didn't probably get a grasp. Like, I got my real confidence 5 years in. 5 years in, I was like, I'm going to win in this and I'm going to win big. But it probably wasn't until year 10, probably 10 years ago, actually from now, is when I started to see the fruits of the labor that I put in. Because real estate's different. It's such a big purchase, right? And there's a lot of people doing it. And the truth is, I don't really have a passion for houses. Like, I don't care about the counters. I don't care about the curb appeal. My clients know this, right? For me, it's about analyzing numbers. I like income properties, but I didn't even figure that out, Nav, until 10 years into the business, right? And so I think at the younger age, it was just like, man, I'm just going to keep trying no matter what, because I also understood that quitters don't win and winners don't quit. Like, as cliche as that sounds, I think it's a cliche because it's so true that even at a young age, I was like, I'm not going to quit. I'm just not that person. And I knew that sales and service, being in the sales industry, whatever you want to call it, that was my calling. Probably at about 17, 18-ish, I was like, I'm doing this for the rest of my life.
That was like 23 years ago. So then, and even now, sales is a dirty word. You know? So like, especially, you know, from where we come from in India, you know, it's a dirty word, right? So like at that time, did you have that feeling? You loved it, but did you have that insecurity?
And I know exactly where you're going with the question, brother. And for me, I've never thought of myself being associated with the negative connotation of sales, like being a dirty salesperson, being sleazy, because I was never that. You know, there might be some customers and clients out there that didn't get the best of me, my team, or my service from an after sale perspective, like the service afterwards, or you know, the product maybe wasn't completely right for them. But there is nobody in like, and I, that's why I love content and me being out there so much more, because I think people would start to come back now and say, he's full of shit, right? And nobody has. And I don't really even need to touch on black or knock on wood, because I've never screwed anybody. I've been so afraid since day one, because I kind of know that I have the ability to be persuasive. I have the ability to influence people. And in a weird way, you know, you have that ability. You don't want to take advantage of people as well as that, for lack of a better word, and for anybody who's driving right now or taking their dog for a walk and listening, I'm doing air quotes saying like superpower that I was kind of born with, because I'm so scared of karma. Like, I do have faith and I do believe in God, right? Not to say that everybody should or they shouldn't, but I don't want that person to screw with me. So I don't really like screw with other people. I don't rip people off. And so because I was always like, especially car sales is the one that taught me this. Because out of all sales jobs, in my opinion, in any part of the world, the industry that has the worst rap is specifically used car salesmen. Okay. But when you tell people you're a car salesman, even if you sell new cars, they associate you with used car sales. And so going into that business, I actually didn't even know. I was 18 years old, 18, 19 years old when I got into that business. And I didn't even know people thought of car salesmen as like negative and sleazy and all that. But I learned pretty quickly. And I just told myself, I'm not going to be like them. In fact, I'm going to be the complete opposite. So what did I do? Anytime that there wasn't, like I didn't have any appointments lined up for the day, I drove around to all the other showrooms in my city. Okay. Mm. Consistently, I did that for maybe about 6 to 8 months to learn about the industry,
okay,
right? And I started to see, and I would take off my suit, take off my tie, act like a customer, and bumped into great salespeople, car salespeople. But I also saw why some people have a negative connotation or a negative thought about car salesmen, because I saw the sleaziness come out in people. I was like, all right, that's easy. The bar's set so low. It's set like... people are being pushy.
Yeah.
And people are trying to make buyers buy things that don't fit, like go out of their budget. I got into real estate. 76,000 real estate agents in the greater Toronto area. I'm going to say there's probably only 10,000 max that are full-time. Nothing against the part-time real estate agents. Make your living the way you want to. Like, it doesn't matter. There could be more part-timers. It doesn't bother me. However, they don't call people back, part-timers and full-timers. They don't call people back. I'm like, the bar is again set very, very low to be successful in. And you're kind of a cousin in the industry as a mortgage broker. We're kind of cousins in the industry. It's the same. Real estate agents, mortgage brokers, very similar. You find fantastic ones like yourself, and then you find others who don't get back to people. They try to, you know, buy this. It's going to be great. Yeah, don't
short-term
worry.
Gains, right?
Short-term gains, right? And they're more transactional than trying to build relationships. And so I always said, I'm going to take it the other way. I'm going to go, it's going to be the long route. It's going to be the harder route, but I'm going to go from a relationship perspective than being more transactional. In fact, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. Like, I've grown a database from the number of 3,500 is important when I talk about like my database and my sphere of influence, whatever you want to call it, because 6 years ago, there was a third partner in my real estate organization, and he tragically passed away. And so that's when I started to really focus in on and take over the sales and marketing for my real estate company. 5 years later, we're sitting at 11,700 people. But every single person that's in my database is permission-based. I never bought a lead. I didn't even do a Google AdWord. All I did is focus all my efforts on the people that we were already serving. When we service them well, ask them for more introductions. And that's how we kind of built it out. It was never for a short-term game. In fact, we probably say no to business just as much as we say yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because we just know it's not the right time for the person. We get called into listing appointments, meaning putting up for someone's home or condo for sale. And we tell them, like, please don't sell your home. Like, yeah. Why don't we get you in touch with them, the mortgage guy?
And that's what I've realized is when you say no, they have friends and they say that this guy is the only one who didn't let us make a mistake. So you go to them, and I get four more clients from the person that I said no to. And I'm sure that, you know, you have experienced that.
But you see someone like you, that's why you're successful in this, because you have the mindset to and the foresight and the vision to see the other four.
Yeah.
Right. Like most people either see a dollar sign in front of them or they see like, okay, like, I'm only going to be able to help this person. What they don't know, I actually think it's more than four, Nav, that you might get four clients right away, as experienced as you are. What I always think of in the way that I look at it, the average person to me knows 200 people.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I might not get to know everyone's 200 people, but I'm going to take a shot at it. Right. And so when I meet a new person, I'm already thinking, okay, this person knows 200 people. As long as I give them the best education that I possibly can, because God knows. And I mean, I don't hide this. I know I can't forecast what's going to happen in the real estate market and what's going to happen with the interest rates and all that. Like, I can maybe have my thoughts and opinions around it, but I can never really forecast exactly what's going to happen. As long as I give the education to the best of my ability, I can, what I'm doing is allowing the prospect to make a quality informed decision themselves. And that's it. I leave it at that. And wherever the chips fall, if they decide to do business with us, great. If they say, you know what, not right now, but you can stay in touch. That's what I'm really looking for, because now I got their permission and now we could do business together, possibly in the future. But in the meantime, Mr. and Mrs. Prospect, could you share my content? And if they can share my content with their friends and family, now that's how I'm going to get to those 200 people.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think you're the perfect person to ask this question, because
I think I'm the perfect person. I thought you were just going to stop there.
From a sales point of view, I always had this question, and I wanted to ask, you know, someone who has done sales all their life. Can you change people's mind? And I'm not just talking in context of selling a car to them or a house to them. What I mean is that you have to have a motivation as a buyer. If he's coming to a salesperson, there has to be some kind of intrinsic motivation to buy that car or to think of it in 6 months or buy that house. And same way when you're making content, there has to be some kind of reciprocity, you know, in the audience. They want to listen to it. Do you believe, and do you have any instances where you actually turned around someone's negative mindset into a positive?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. I actually think even if the person doesn't want to buy the car, doesn't want to buy the house, doesn't want to listen to your piece of content, I actually think some people can actually get the person to buy a car, buy the house, or listen to the content.
How?
Just because you can completely just lie to people.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So like at the bare minimum, I know I can do it. You can do it if you want to, because you don't really, if you don't care about the long term, like we just finished speaking about, then why do you care? You just lie to them and tell them that this car is going to have the highest resale value, even though that you know that the car is not going to have a high resale value. Or you're telling somebody to maybe invest into a multiplex in an area that is up and coming because there's going to be Walmart coming, but you really know Walmart's not coming, right? So you can lie, you can change their mind, you can get people to do certain things. However, what I don't think you can do is have it sustained for a long period of time. And so if the person on the other end especially the content. And I think influencing someone's mind and actually creating long-lasting change, it won't happen unless they have that fire within to change themselves. Because that's why I actually think motivation, it's good. Inspiration is phenomenal. Why? Because motivation doesn't generally last long. But when you're inspired, it's like you're actually being pulled towards something. When you're motivated, it's like going to the gym. It's why I think people on January 1st are the ones that are motivated. They're the ones who quit in like March 1st or maybe even January 3rd. Nikki, who's our videographer on the other end here for me, I mean, he used to be a personal trainer. He probably has a million stories of the amount of people that he signed up on December 31st and January 1st, but 98% of them probably quit in the first 2 weeks, right? Because they were motivated. It's those few that were inspired because they were being pulled to something bigger or more important because their why was big enough and, more importantly, strong enough.
But don't you think that being inspired is also short-lived if it's not backed by action?
Oh, because 100%.
I see a lot of people, you know, watch a lot of content, read a lot of books, and think a lot about starting a business, but they never do that.
Yeah.
So first, you know, there are two parts to this question, right? So one is, you know, I think, you know, even inspiration can be short-lived if it's not backed by action. And why do you think people, is it just fear of losing their current state? Or why do you think people don't take that action?
Yeah, so to your first part, I do think inspiration as well can be short-lived. I just think it could be, it generally is sustained more than motivation, right? Because again, motivation is more of like a push activity where for me, being inspired is being pulled by something bigger. In terms of why people don't take action, I think it's a myriad of reasons. Number one is, and not in any particular order, fear is for sure on the top of that list. I actually also think it's because the people that they surround themselves with, right? Because if you hang around five negative people, five like just Debbie Downers, they're always down and they're not motivated or inspired or they're not positive, then you have a high probability of being number six. On the flip side, though, if you hang around five inspiring people, five people who are action takers, you have a high probability of being number six. I think the other reason is that the why is not big enough. It's not strong enough, right? If your only motivation is money sometimes, I can tell you that you might do short-term, you might take the short-term way because you just need to make some money really quickly. But again, that's not going to be long lasting, right? And so for you to build a business around it, you're going to, I think, come and hit your head against the wall because you're going to be taking a lot of these short term, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a lot of these short term habits you're going to involve yourself into, and some could be legal and some could be illegal. But at the end of the day, to make it sustainable, I think you need to have a strong why. Fear is the only way that I've come to realize to get over it is understanding that you just do it first and then it becomes easier. Because I'm sure if we go back to your first video, you probably weren't as comfortable and as good as you are now. And you were probably very, very scared. And maybe you were scared.
Insecure.
Maybe you were scared to speak to Simran, but after you did, you're like, oh, okay, it wasn't as hard. Yeah. She didn't bite my nose off. You know what I mean? Like the first time that you rode a bike, you were probably very scared, and then you did it and it became a little easier. The easiest analogy to understand is driving. We were all scared. In fact, we all did the 10 and 2 and fix your mirrors, your rear mirror, your side mirrors. And now you do it subconsciously, like all of that, plus be on the phone, plus eat your food, plus do your makeup. You know what I mean? Some people are changing and all that kind of stuff. And you only come to realize that you can get over fear by doing it first. Unfortunately, you get confident and confidence by actually doing it first, right? I wish it worked the other way around. I wish it worked that you get the confidence and then you do. Because then more people would be living what they want to be living in, right? But because you have to actually do it first and then get confidence, it's why most people don't get to the next level.
And that's where, you know, I love talking to immigrants, because when I hear that, I like, you know, when I left my job, right? So they asked me, how did you leave your job? Like, that's so hard, right? So how did you leave your current state? And I was like, I left the country. Like, I made that decision once. The only difference is that why to me was very clear, that I want a better life for me and my family, my future family, right? It's just that when you're leaving your job, your why is not clear. Which is what you lead it to, right? Yeah. So there's clarity that I need a better life. And obviously, you know, it's very clear that Canada just has, you know, resources. And whether you do good and bad, that's a different, you know, conversation. It depends on you. But that's where, you know, I feel that you did it once. I did it once. Then how is it any different to leave my job and start a business? I left a country. How is it any different, right?
So, I think over time you just start to have the building blocks in place, yeah. Right? And it's the old adage of building with momentum, right? Because the first time you did it, okay. Look, I think one of the toughest moves is to leave a country and start all over again, so to speak, right? But on the other end, I think it becomes easier because you've kind of burned all your bridges, right? Like, you kind of probably, when you were on that flight here, you just, there was no other alternative. It was like, I'm coming to Canada and I'm not going back there.
This is it.
This is it. Because you were able to do that, there was no plan B. Plan A was only, the execution of plan A was only the only option that you had. And I think more people should think like that. Like, the problem, though, is that they have too many options here. Okay, well, I could work here. I could work here. I could start a business. And then when you think about starting a business, you have 57 million businesses you can start. You have a lot of options. And then you kind of get into paralysis by analysis. And what that does is make you do nothing, right? I would rather people just start selling pots, like flowers, and then start doing content, then start selling houses. And why? Because at least you're taking action and you're training the brain to make decisions, right? And
eliminating things that you don't like.
Right away. It's like, I always use the analogy of eating at a buffet line, right? Like, if there's 52 items, I'm probably not going to try all 52 in the first time, but I'm going to probably put like 18 things on my plate, just little things, right? And then the second time that I go in line, I've already done the process of elimination. I only like 13 of the 18, right? And then I'll get a little bit more of a certain item. That's how I think people need to think of trying to find their passion, right? Like, how do I find the passion is probably the question that I get the most, because they understand that if you do what you're passionate about, the money will always follow, because you'll outwork people. Like, it's very hard for people to outwork me, because I'm not even playing the game that you're playing. I'm not playing in the working game. I really haven't worked in the last 15, 18 years. Like, actually worked. Like, my father worked and my mother worked in a factory. I have not done that stuff. Because none of this feels like work. We're in the middle of the day on a Wednesday and we're doing a podcast. Like, this is not work, man. Oh, right? Yeah. Like, I'm having a blast, right? And so I could do this all day, though, all day long. I'm actually going to study it. I'm going to try to get better. It's going to be hard to keep up with me, right? But then the question comes is, well, how do I find that for myself? I was lucky. I found sales at a very, very young age, but that can't be an excuse for somebody who's watching and listening right now. You got to do, which is try a bunch of things, and then you'll start to figure out what you do like and what you don't like. Do more of what you like. Get rid of what you don't like. It's quite simple when you think about it from that perspective.
And you don't have to leave your job.
Ah, not before today's day and age, man. You know, back when maybe in the early 80s, 90s, like, my parents could never have done this, right? Because we just didn't have the internet. I mean, the internet's just, it's just a complete game changer. Yeah. Like, there's really no excuse now. Like, so if you love cameras, and if you don't like maybe holding cameras, recording or editing, but you like every little technological piece of the camera and you want to start selling cameras, but you have a day job working at Walmart, for example, you keep that job, but at night then come back and start selling cameras online.
Yeah.
Whatever you like, whatever your passion is, no excuse in today's day and age, because you can reach the world. I have a funny feeling a lot, not majority or anything, I don't know that, but I have a funny feeling that a lot of your subscribers and your listeners are from all over the world.
Yeah.
Would you agree? Yeah. So, I mean, what day and age could you have done that? Like, you're sitting here in Toronto, Ontario right now, Toronto, Canada, and you're reaching other people in India and Australia and Africa, all over the world, right? And that's kind of cool.
You know, I think that's the number one reason why I did so much business, because of content. I was a content creator first. I still call myself content creator first. And then, you know, okay, I'm a mortgage agent. And once you have content and the audience who trusts, and you touch them at different touch points, if I want to sell cars and, you know, open a dealership, I know that, you know, they'll trust me there as well, because I have built a trust in myself and not in the work that I'm doing.
For sure.
And that's what content does. And it has been a game changer. You know, I completely agree. Let me just go back in your life a little bit. You know, you talked about your partner, you know, who we lost. Mm-hmm. Like, just take me back to that, you know, that place and what happened. And how did that shape you?
So he when I got into real estate in 2004 is when I got licensed, I guess, 2004, 2005. I was actually in the business for about 3 months, and I was with a company, a big brand, and one of the trainings that they gave me on day one, and just a great guy, like the broker at the time of that, at that office, he gave me a phone book, and he said to me, you know, start in the middle, at the M's and the N's, because people who start cold calling a phone book, they usually start at the A's and the Z's, and they never make it to the M and the N. So that was my training. And so that's what I did. I started cold calling people when I started, which is completely different than what I kind of, how I built my business now. And even in car sales, it was all through referrals and stuff that we spoke about earlier. And after maybe about, I'm going to say about 45 to 60 days of doing that, I was doing very well in car sales. The job that I left, 21 years old, you know, I was probably making about 120,000-130,000, had a free car, no insurance, no gas, live with my parents. My cost was a $40 phone bill a month. I was like, I'm going to go back. I can't do this real estate stuff. I'm 22, 23 years old. Maybe I'm just not cut out for it. Maybe they need, like, adults need to sell houses, because I don't even own a house. I don't even know what the hell, like, I don't even know how to change a filter in a house. I know nothing about it. I'm going to go back. I was going into the office to go pick up some mail. And back then, to tell you how long I've been in the business, and some of your younger guys are going to be like, what the hell is he talking about? But at the reception desk, a fax came through, and the fax said free business development seminar. And that, I took a look at, and I'm like, free, it's right down the street for me. It's in 2-3 days. I was like literally 2-3 days away of quitting. Okay. I was just going to tell the broker I'm out. I was going to go back to car sales. I read this. I go to this seminar 2-3 days later. It's a room full of 150 Punjabi people. Okay. So, like, it's not like I stood out by any means. And in the middle of the seminar, the guy starts asking questions, the speaker, and I start putting up my hand and answering them, thinking I had the answers because I've done things in sales before. And it was really about, like, websites. And this is, again, 2004, 2005. Yeah, websites are kind of new and stuff, right? And he's like, who has an amazing site? And I'm like, man, my site is kick-ass. I put up my hand. He's like, great. How many deals have you done from the site? I'm like, none. He's like, how many leads have you got from the site? I'm like, none. He's like, but yet you think you have a great site. And then there was a couple of other things he picked on me. I call him the next morning and I said, look, man, there's some coaching program that you have to offer or something. Like, I love how you spoke to me because you gave me the straight goods. There was no sugarcoating anything. I go meet him. Him and I start talking for 20 minutes. He's like, listen, I do have a coaching program. I don't want any of that from you. Just join. I'm building my real estate team. It's him and his sister. And he's like, I need a young guy like you. You've been in sales. Let's, like, try to help me grow this, and I'll teach you along the way. And that day I told him, I was like, listen, I'll clean your toilets. I'll do whatever it takes here. I just, don't lie to me. Don't tell me you're going to train me and then give me some bullshit excuse. Like, I just, don't be a scam artist. He's like, you got nothing to worry about here. Just come join me. For 13 years, I was his right-hand guy. We grew that organization at that time to about 50 agents. He was not only my mentor, he became my business partner in that 13-year period. He was a third older brother. As I mentioned, I have two older brothers. I loved him dearly. He, same affection for me. We were about 20 years apart, maybe in age or something like that. I can't remember. And tragically, on a Saturday night, I get a phone call that he passed away, and my life kind of just turned upside down. And because he was also somewhat the face of the company, but this was my older brother, like losing literally, the only thing that we didn't share was blood, but we spent a lot of time together, lot of memories. But I was lucky because in a funny way, in the last couple of years, it was almost like he was mentoring me from a different perspective, which was to do what he was doing on stage. Because he was the guy who's on stage. He would probably be the one you'd be do the podcast with right now. And he, you know, content on social media wasn't big 5-6 years ago as it is now, obviously. But he was starting to get into that. Very charismatic guy. Very, very charismatic. And could hold a stage very well. And at that time, it just left a gaping hole in not only kind of our business, because he was the face, but also in just in my life. Like, I was really missing a guy that was very important. But I had to just remind myself that I had the tools. I had the tools that he taught me. I had the tools of so much personal development / self-help section in chapters and audiobooks that I've listened to. And now it was time to put that all together. And to your point earlier, like, actually take action with it, right? And so that's, you know, 4 years ago exactly, I turned on a mic like we're talking into now, and I introduced myself to the world, and it sounded like I was, and it was only 4 years ago, so I was 37 or whatever. It sounded like I was going through puberty at that time. I, in fact, never had the cameras on because I was so scared of them. So I just did an audio podcast only, but about 17, 18 episodes in, I got a big interview with a real estate agent in New York, Ryan Serhant, and my team was like, you got to put the cameras on. We put the cameras on. I brought it back to the city here. We started to cut the clips, and I realized what you can do with video content, and I attest all that to the stuff that, his name was Simon, that Simon taught me, that he instilled into me. He gave me a lot of confidence when there was a point in, remember I mentioned earlier, like for the first 5 years, I didn't know how I was gonna win in this, right? But he just instilled a lot of confidence. And that's why for anybody who does watch my content, I speak so much about the importance of who you surround yourself with. It's so critical because they become like your shield, your armor. Not to sugarcoat stuff, not be like, don't worry, Nav, everything's gonna be okay. You don't need to work. Not that nonsense. It's more of like, hey, don't worry, like we've been down this road. Like you don't have to hit your head against the wall here because we already did it. Or, Nav, like you're really screwing up, man. Like you're not putting in the time or that kind of stuff. That happens when you surround yourself with people that have done it before or are always willing to try stuff. And so that was a very, very important person in my life. I've had a couple of other mentors that definitely are similar in my life and in my mind when it comes to mentorship, but he was probably the one that was in my life the longest. And so I think about him every single day in some format or some fashion. His name comes up or I just think about him, but he was a very important person. And I hope anybody who's listening or watching, what they think of, even if you've never, I hope my worst enemy never goes through a tragedy like that. But if and when something happens like that, there are other people who have gone through whatever you're going through, whatever it may be. In fact, if someone else has gotten through what you're going through, then you really don't have an excuse. Because there's a lot of bad things that have happened to a lot of people, and I understand, and I feel really bad. I feel sorry. I wish I could help more. And I'm sure others could wish that they could help more. But if someone else has done something, like if there's been an immigrant who's left India and come to Canada and made something, you really don't have an excuse, right? Because success leaves clues, right? Your viewers can't see it, but there's a massive sign behind us right now. that says success leaves clues to remind us that if someone else has done it, they've already left you the clues. It's just your job to pick it up. And so I just looked for stories like that where other people had to go through some tragedy and how they got over it. I grabbed those tools. I tried to make use of them. But there's not a day that I don't think about the guy, but I know he's overwatching. I know he's ecstatic because I have a current partner in my real estate company. Him and I, who also went through the same tragedy at the same time, him and I don't think some people around our offices and in the industry say like, oh my God, you guys really took it to the next level. I think what we did is we just did it differently, right? Because our backs up are against the wall. Like we lost our closest friend, brother. He was really the CEO in the brand. He was the face of the brand. So we had no choice. And at that time, myself or my current partner had to kind of pick up the slack in terms of who was going to do that. And I was the right fit. Like it's, I've been in sales my whole life.
Yeah.
And so I was ready to take over the sales and marketing aspect of our business.
No, makes sense. So you have two kids, right? So what would you say to them? Because like they are almost like a third generation, now here. And I do feel that, you were in a household in Rexdale. You had seen, you had seen struggle. You had seen your parents struggle. But they have probably not seen the same thing, that you saw your parents do or your parents saw them do or, they were living it, right? So what would you say to anyone who is who's born here? How do we get them to experience that? Like, because I do feel that success, it's not the only way, but pain and struggle is one way that pushes you into for success. Sure. So what do you say?
I'm probably not the guy that should be giving parenting advice, but I can tell you what I try to do with my boys. First, I understand that no matter what, they will not live through the struggle that I saw my parents live through and what we had less of than what they have. Like they've been on more vacations. So I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old. They've been on more vacations, the 7-year-old, let's take him, than my parents ever went in their whole life. Okay. In fact, up until 25, 30, even more than I've been on since 0 to 30, from 0 to a 7. So no matter what, I can't really instill in them the ruggedness or the toughness. As much as I think I might be able to, I've come to realize there's no way, because they've grown up in a bigger home. They've grown up in better schools. They've grown up with like more options of food. Like my mom and dad, this is what's for dinner. And if I said I don't want it, they'd be like, no problem. But we don't have any other food. Like, I'm not making you something different. My kids get options of 3 different types of dinner some nights. How can I change that environment? I cannot, right? So what I do is I try to instill some of the basic stuff that I think that they need. And number one is being nice to people. That to me is probably, I think, what's gotten me further in life than any other skill I've had. It's actually very simple, but even I still see a lot of people not use some of those skills, including my kids. Sometimes they forget, which is please and thank you. That's it. Just as starting with something as simple as please and thank you. So being nice to people will get them very, very far. And then it's the same thing that my father instilled, which is just reminding them that I need you to fail. Like I tell them all the time, my 9-year-old right now is in rep basketball, but he didn't make rep basketball for 2 years. And he was like, you can imagine a 7-year-old not making a team. He thought his life was over. Like the first year, I think he actually thought that he was going to die. Like the way that he was reacting to the situation. And I was telling him then, I was like, I know you don't understand how good this is for you, because you have a choice now. We can go home. And we can have dinner, which we will, and you can keep crying, and there's nothing wrong. I will cry. I will sit with you all night. No problem. I'll put you to bed, and you can keep crying. Or we can have dinner, and you, not with dad, I'm not coming because I'm not going to be there all the time. We have a basketball net outside. Go shoot for an hour. Go do anything with that basketball for an hour, because if you end up choosing that, you have a shot. You're not promised anything. You have a shot if you do it again the next night and the next night. Now, he didn't do it every single night, but he did that night. He went out and started shooting, and he started shooting. And the year after, he still didn't make the rep team, but this time he didn't cry. He's like, Dad, I just got to keep doing it, right? I'm like, yeah, that's it. I don't know, son.
That's beautiful.
Now, I also tell him all the time, I'm quite realistic. I'm like, look, I'm actually like my brothers and I, you can't tell by me now at 41, but we have some athletic bones, okay? We played a lot of sports growing up, but we still don't have a DNA. We don't have the DNA of being a basketball star. Because there's certain aspects, like the average person, you got to get to 6 feet, 6'2", 6'4", whatever. So I tell my boys, I'm like, look, you're going to have, if you make the NBA, you're going to be in the minority of guys who make the NBA, because I don't think you have the genes to be 6'6", like Jordan was, or a lot of the basketball players need to be. However, I want you to understand that if you continuously work at it, you have a shot better than somebody who's going to give up. And so that instilling in them the failure, because I don't really care if they make the NBA. I don't care what they do in their life in terms of business or whatever. I want them to just be happy at whatever they do. But whatever they do decide to do, they're going to run up against some type of obstacle. I want to instill in them that they have to keep going, because that's what I saw my father do. That's what I saw my mother do. That's what I've seen my brothers do. And that's what I do. Like, it's a lot of failures around here, but I think we keep winning in certain ways because we just keep getting up. And that's kind of, that's what I want to see my kids do. But I don't really do it. I don't really set them up for a fake environment. I know they have more than I've ever had. Like, they've done things at 7 and 9 that I still haven't done. Like, you know, I probably experienced it because of them. So to even remotely think that they're going to grow up close to the hardships that I had would be a complete lie, because I have money.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to be egotistical around it. I have extra money that my parents never ever dreamt. They didn't even dream about having it, let alone having it. So, like, you know, when something breaks.
But I think foundationally, if you build, you know, the niceness and build, you know, the attitude of
one for me.
I think that foundational is, those foundations are important.
So, right? Like, my 9-year-old, he's kind of like mom. Very, like, you could tell the grades are coming in, like the school that they go to, it's not like how we got graded and stuff like that. It's like, I just read the report cards and I'm like, holy crap, is he ever like his mom? Like, very, very intelligent. Mom's very smart. The 7-year-old, smart kid, but he's kind of like that, right? Like, he's like, the report card comes, he bothers the kids, and it's like, oh my God, he's like, it's almost identical to what they said about me. And I, for me, when I get those, it never bothers me. Like, I can care less. When I read something or the teacher calls and says they were rude to the other kids from the perspective of, like, maybe he broke a project of the kid. Like, you know, they were building something and he kicked it over. That really bothers me. And that is, you're getting punished for this.
Yeah.
Bring home all the D's you want. I could care less. Because I just know that that's not what you want. You're passionate about. But you're not kind to your teacher, we got a problem. We got, because that is the actual skill set that has helped me grow the team I have, right? Like, Nikki and I and Laura and I and Tyler and I, we don't see eye to eye all the times. And we are like a family here. We're here to, like, I see Nikki sometimes more than I see my kids, right? Because we're here 10 hours a day, 11 hours a day working with each other. Then, like siblings, we might not get along sometimes, or I might get on his skin or he might get under my skin, but we don't tell each other to F off, right? We just know, okay, we need a little bit of space, right? And so I think understanding kindness and the basic fundamentals is way more important than trying to set them up for struggle and hardship, because I think they're going to find that themselves. Yeah, some way or another, they're going to their heart's going to, unfortunately, right? Your heart's going to get broken. Like, what can I tell you? You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a girl that's going to break your heart, man. And
there's no shortcut to relationships, right?
No, exactly, right?
So
And so I think it's really a matter of spending as much time with them and letting them fail.
So Jas, this is the last section. I just recently started calling it the mindset matrix because I'm just trying to go into your mind
a little bit. I like that.
What's the best advice that you got and from whom?
The best advice I've ever got, it would probably be, I've gotten a lot of pieces of advice from very important people. But I think the one that kind of just sticks with me right now is just from a book. And that book being, The Success Principles by Jack Canfield, who also wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul, which I think is like the number one book of all time. And it was a ready, fire, aim. It was a strategy. I think I have 3-4 signs actually all around my office because we really like to remind ourselves, do not stick too much in the aim process. The sign says ready, fire, aim. Like you do need to aim, but do it after you pull the trigger. Because when you pull the trigger, you can then adjust along the way, right? Where most people get stuck is never pulling the trigger because they think that everything needs to be perfect. You and I were talking and joking off air, and we were just talking about a mutual friend of ours who has like a membership group that he started. Big shout out to Alfonso. I know he's been on your podcast as well. Got a membership group now of over like 800 people, and they just came out with a website a couple of weeks ago. And he's had the group maybe for a year or so. Yeah. I don't want to misquote.
More than a year.
Imagine he's stuck and tried to spend time on his website. He might not have got to 800. Maybe he only got to 80. Who knows? Maybe he only got to 8 because he wanted to perfect the website, right? He adjusted along the way and now figured out, oh my God, I have 800 people. All he probably did is, or could do very easily, send a quick text. You're part of the group and say, hey, Nav, just curious, what would you like in a website? He collects all that data and makes a website now around the 800 people and reverse engineers it. Way better than trying to think about what's perfect. So I think that would be probably the best piece of advice I got because I've never, and now it's gotten me in trouble as well, but I've had way more success with this strategy than it's gotten me in trouble. I just fire, man. Like I don't really overthink a lot of stuff. I think that's probably one major reason why my real estate company has been so successful because I just started doing things. I never really thought about if I should do a podcast. I was like, this looks good to me. Let's do it. I never thought if I should hire more people. I was like, let's do it. I never really thought about, you know what? I suck with a computer. Like I still type with one finger. So I haven't touched a computer in 7-8 years where other people might've been like, do I need a computer? I was like, no, I don't need a computer. I could do everything from my phone. So I do a lot of things very, very quickly. Sometimes it gets me in trouble, right? But like you asked to do the podcast, even before I looked at my schedule, I was like, yeah, we'll do it. I have no idea. I have a launch for a new company. I have a launch for a condo project. My team gives me always the evil eyes because I just say yes a lot. But man, like I never would have got to meet you. I never would have got to meet Simran. Like, you know, we had fun talking about the shoes. Like it's just, I brought hopefully some type of value to one of your listeners today, right? Yeah. And so that only happens when you pull the trigger often enough and then you adjust along the way.
Yeah. Second one. I have 4 questions. So second one, if you were made the president of the world for one day, what's that one rule that you'll make?
The one
rule that you'll make that everyone has to follow? Could be anything.
Every single person has to eat that day, like physically have food in their mouth, I think would be the rule that I would make because when you're full, you're not going to be hungry anymore. And when you're not hungry from the perspective of like a necessity and a need, I have a funny feeling you're going to be more kind to people. So there's people who don't eat for days. If I could just like have at least everyone in the world eat for one day, that would be really cool for me.
Wow.
Like, because I know, unfortunately, how much food I might have not fully finished last night's dinner or today at lunchtime or whatever. And I can't give that to everyone at all times. So at least if I could give somebody the opportunity to eat that day, that would be really cool for me.
That's beautiful. Third one. So if you were to, you know, take out anyone for lunch or dinner, it could be anyone, dead or alive, you know, doesn't matter. One wish. Who would that person be and why?
This one might surprise some people, but it would be a rapper, Tupac,
okay.
who, for me, at the age of like 16 to 17 when I finished high school, I guess I was, something like that, 17 to like 21, he had just passed away around there. So he passed away in 1996. So yeah, I think my timing is perfect. That he was, his ability to write and how he articulated that writing, his passion, because he really wasn't passionate 100% about like actually rapping. That was just something that he was gonna do. I just really fell in love with his style, his energy, his emotion. I think he's very, very misunderstood. I think there's a part of his life that he was finding himself. He passed away at the age of 25, so it's very young. And from 23 and a half to say 25, just before he passed away, that's when he got himself into trouble, but I think he was finding himself. And so that's where he got misunderstood. But man, was he ever a very, very smart person. And he said something in an interview that, like, I was like, wow, I think, like, yeah, he's so right. He said in an interview that he doesn't think he's going to be the one who changes the world, but he's going to be the one who inspires the person that changes the world. And I have a funny feeling there's people that have changed the world, but that were inspired by him, because his music still lives on. And more importantly than his music, his writings still live on. I mean, the guy was a poet. Like, literally, he loved poetry. He wrote a lot of poetry. And so if I could have dinner with him, it would be with him. And I think, like, close second to him would be, like, a Kobe Bryant. Because for me, Kobe, it's why he's on our wall in the behind us here. He was actually just, I actually think in his second career as a business owner and a media mogul, he was going to be better than he was in basketball. And that's saying a lot because he was so good in basketball. But I would really like to pick his brains. Actually, I was DMing him. He never DM'd back. I want to make sure I get that out there. But because I'm pretty relentless in terms of getting people on podcasts and stuff. And so I know that was going to happen. I could just feel the vibrations that was going to happen. But he passed away. And that would probably be somebody who I would love to have a meal with.
All right. Last one. And I want to take you back 10 years, exactly 10 years from now in 2013.
Okay.
What were you doing then?
In 2013?
2013.
That's actually really easy, man. It was the second happiest moment in my life, easily. My 9-year-old was born at that age. Okay. So, because he's turning 10 now in 2013, in September. And I thought that I kind of was going to be the most important person in my life and my wife and all that. But then when that guy came out, he definitely changed my outlook on everything, because it was like, well, now, like, I know who I want to do a lot for. Like, I have somebody who's going to look up to me for the rest of his life, you know, hopefully anyways. I say that was the second most important part of the second most happiest moment in my life, because by far the most happiest moment in my life was in 2015 when my 7-year-old was born, because that was the first time my 9-year-old saw my 7-year-old, and I captured that moment on tape, and like literally the first time they laid eyes on each other. And having two older brothers myself and having two sons, it was by far the moment that I will cherish for the rest of my life.
Wow,
because beautiful. They still have that. And for me, for all the stuff we spoke about today, and even specifically about the kids, if those two just stay close and that's all that I ever got out of this life, I'm good. Like, if I hope my businesses succeed, because I love Nikki like he's part of my family. I love Laura. I love Tyler. I love these guys so much. But that is like something that, you know, is very personal and near and dear to my heart, obviously. If those two, though, stay close as friends, not just as brothers, but as friends, I think I've succeeded in life.
Yeah, no. The reason why I asked you this question, and, you know, it was beautiful, you know, I never knew that, you know, that would be your answer, right? The reason why I asked this question is that I am a firm believer that we underestimate what we can do in 5 to 10 years.
100%.
So at that time, you know, when your son was born, 9-year-old was born, did you think that you'll have the life that you have
for them today? From that perspective, look, I think you know, 10 years ago, I knew I had a special talent, right? I knew I was different from the perspective of that I had the ability to communicate with people. I didn't see it unfold like this, that's for sure. And I completely agree with what you said about, we actually overestimate what we can do in a year. We underestimate what we can do in 5 to 10 years. And I didn't think I would necessarily be here, but my business partner was alive at that time. And so we had other dreams and aspirations for our company, which was specifically growing our agents. We thought that's what we're going to do. We're going to grow a company with 1,000 real estate agents. I probably haven't thought about 1,000 real estate agents in the last 5 years because that's just not where I'm going with this, right? I at that time, I never thought I would create content ever. I just didn't even foresee this. I didn't even know what the hell it was, like creating content. Like, I was like, YouTube? Like, why the heck would I be on YouTube? That's what other people do. Like, I'm not a YouTube guy. You know what I mean? Podcasting wasn't even around at that time. And definitely wouldn't have thought that you would be sitting here talking to me or care to talk to me about what I've done in the last 10 years. You definitely, if you look at from now, at the time of this recording, 2023 to 2033, most people are going to definitely underestimate what they can do in that period of time because it's so hard to look at 10-year windows. But the next 10 years are going to go by so much faster than the last 10 years, right? We know this as you get older, you realize how quick time goes, right?
With the technology, especially.
With the technology, for sure, right? And so I think it's very important for everybody who's watching or listening to understand, though, that whatever is actually worthwhile to build, it takes time. It just takes time. Like, unfortunately, what you might see on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook or listen to on podcasts is people who it seems like they've had quick success, but you don't know their backstory. You don't know how long it took, or they're just bullshitting, period. It could be one of the other, right? But anything worthwhile will take time. You just got to have the patience to let it play out. And in the short term, God's delays are not God's denials. So just because you didn't get something at the time that you expected it, that doesn't mean that you're not going to get it. You just got to wait it out.
Yeah. Jazz, this was amazing. I have this dream for my podcast that every podcast I do, if it hits one person, you know, in their heart and they turn their life around, that'll be a win. And I really wish and hope that there's one person who is watching this, who looked at you and who was looking at you, and then now they know their background, your background, and then they can turn their life around. That'll be a win. So thank you so much, Jazz, for doing this. This is beautiful.
I hope the same for this conversation. I hope I brought some value to the conversation. And I hope that somebody who's watching or listening not only maybe saw themselves in me, but maybe just spark something in themselves, right? Not even one person taking the whole conversation and get inspired, but just one thing that you said or I said, and they now actually take action would be my goal. But to you, my man, thank you for, again, taking the drive here. I know you had like an iPad, but I never saw you look at the thing, and you were able to just rhyme off questions and thoughts. And so obviously you're an expert and a pro at this. And so congratulations to you.
Thank you so much, Jazz.
Awesome. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.